It's Free Talk Live's live Sunday edition, and you can call in and talk about whatever's on your mind. If you're listening to this show anytime from, you know, I've been wanting to switch over from saying Eastern time zones to doing 24-hour Zulu time. So if you're listening anytime between, help me out here, Daryl, I think it's 2300 Zulu to 200 Zulu.
It is currently 6 minutes after midnight UTC.
So that would be
midnight to 3 o'clock.
0-100 to 300 Zulu.
Now you're just going to confuse everybody except for people that work in international businesses that use UTC on a regular basis.
They're not going to learn until they get confused. You know what I mean?
Guys, so, last week I told you that I couldn't care less about you about this topic, but I did want to say that I support the 24-hour clock, the all-around-the-globe idea. I think that that is a good solution. And then localities can just start, instead of talking about 12 noon, they can just say noon if they want to get
they can just say 1200.
Back to nature like that.
They can just say 1200, which is the Zulu time. So they just say 1200. It doesn't necessarily mean noon. Noon would be whenever the sun is at its apex.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. If they want to, you know, get back into like a 16th century feeling about tracking the day's progress by the sun, they can do that on their own time. But people conducting business or whatever, or who need to be precise about things, can use this UTC thing that you're talking about.
There you go. So we've got a whole slate of things that we want to talk about, but it looks like there is some, well, for us, breaking news. I didn't hear about it until just before we went on the air. There's been protesters.
Oh, there have been a bunch of protesters
rammed by a police car.
The whole Sacramento situation doesn't seem to be getting a lot of coverage.
I don't know that much about Sacramento and what's going on, so.
You heard about Stephen Clark getting shot 20 times by police.
Yeah.
About a week and a half ago.
He got shot seven or eight times.
I didn't get the clarity on that either. Was he running or not running? And I just don't know.
He happened to have been running.
Okay.
He was not running from police.
Okay.
Police were searching for someone.
I see.
Helicopter saw somebody running. Ah, this must be the person we're looking for.
Okay.
Tells the ground unit this is where the guy is. They charge into his backyard.
Gotcha.
Start yelling at him.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't know their police because they don't identify themselves until after they have fired 15 rounds.
Plus it's
and then they said police.
The whole thing where you're just supposed to immediately know, like a police officer yells an order and within 2 seconds you're supposed to comply.
Right.
I mean, you know,
they started firing 3 seconds after saying, "Show us your hands."
Armed uniform people busting into your home, you know, I mean, it's your yard, right? That's
right.
Your home, and telling you what to do is a little weird. And if people don't react immediately, apparently it's okay to start shooting them. I find that to be an unacceptable position to an untenable position.
Right. And even if he had been the person that they were looking for,
I think
right
it's likely
now,
that he was.
How so?
The description that the police give, and that's what they have. There's some stills maybe from body cam footage that they have, or I don't think there's anything from the helicopter.
What about clothing?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, is there different clothing on? We've got a body cam still here.
The body camera is of the cops shooting the person.
Okay.
There's not body cameras of someone smashing windows.
Okay.
But even if he was the person they were looking for, the punishment for the crimes in California is not the death penalty.
Okay. Go ahead, Jenny Ray.
Yep. I am just inclined to believe the police that this was the guy who was breaking car windows, and they said that he broke like a sliding glass door,
yeah.
Jumped over a fence and was in his grandmother's, fled to his grandmother's house. They said he was,
which is where he lived.
He was in the front yard, and then when the police arrived, he fled to the backyard, and then that's when they shot him.
The
and he was
helicopter video that I saw did not show him ever in the front yard running to the backyard. It showed him jump over a fence into the backyard, and then he's walking around in the backyard. The police come from the front and run around the side of the house, start yelling, and then shooting.
So basically, Mark, to answer your question, I believe the police because I read a description, but I don't have the evidence to back it up.
Yeah, that's one of the difficulties is that you know, all sides are going to release whatever they release.
Right, and a lot of times the descriptions video are so vague of somewhere medium height, medium build.
Sure, sure.
Everybody fits that description.
Right.
I don't think that it carries a death sentence for what he did if he did it.
Indeed, and it's unlikely that somebody who's breaking windows is armed and dangerous to the police. As a crime, it seems like a juvenile crime as opposed to an adult crime.
Right.
Even if it was being committed by somebody over the age of 18, it seems like everybody wants to say that there are adult crimes, and if a juvenile commits them, they should be sentenced as an adult. Well, by God, if you're breaking windows as an adult, maybe we should look at juvenile crimes. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like they're particularly dangerous to the police.
Yeah, they said that he had a toolbar. But as far as I know, no toolbar has been located anywhere.
Right. They also said, we thought he was holding a gun that turned out to be a white cell phone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
I think, is there footage of him with his hands out? Because
no.
I've read that.
No.
Okay.
So the news, and I'm using air quotes there because it happened about a day ago, 8:40 p.m. California time, a female protester who was out protesting the death of, or I would say murder, of Stephen Clark. And I don't like the wording of this article. It says she was hit by a Sacramento County Sheriff's Department SUV Saturday night.
It's like the Rush Limbaugh thing where the SUVs have minds of their own.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of those things. And Radley Balco wrote a really good piece in, I think it was the Washington Post several years ago, about the tricky language surrounding whenever police do something.
Mm-hmm.
Police officer discharged his weapon. Someone
was
struck
killed
by a bullet.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, the cop shot somebody.
Yeah.
Yes, he discharged his weapon.
And someone
a bullet struck someone. Female protester hit by a police. No, the cops ran this woman over.
Okay.
She suffered.
They didn't run her over. She bounced off.
She suffered minor injuries while protesting the police killing of Stephen Clark. In a statement released early Sunday, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department said two patrol vehicles were surrounded by a group of protesters around 8:40 p.m., around the time that attendees for a vigil began marching. The statement said protesters began pounding and kicking both vehicles, one of which sustained scratches, dents, and a shattered window.
The vehicle sustained.
Johnny, you said that you saw some video.
There's about 3 seconds of video from the side, and there's a lot of people in the area, but the patrol car, it's like a, I think it's an SUV-style vehicle.
Yeah, it's described here as an SUV.
Okay, there's a lot of people around, but the vehicle itself is not being surrounded. It looks like it's in fine condition at the end of the video, and they're not beating it or anything.
The Sacramento County Sheriff's Department has not yet released photos of the damage to the patrol car.
But there will be.
The woman has not responded to interview requests from KCRA. She was struck by the SUV around 9:15 p.m., The injured woman was taken to a hospital by ambulance shortly after the incident, and the Sheriff's Department is conducting an internal investigation of the incident, and California Highway Patrol is also investigating.
Wouldn't the beat-up vehicle and all this damage on it be the first thing that the police want to show in a situation like this?
Seems like a wise move from a public relations standpoint.
But we have to scratch the thing and bust out a window first.
Well, it's a claim. The number, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450. It's Free Talk Live. You can call in and comment on this police officer running over a protester, I guess, in Sacramento. I guess there's all kinds of protests going on out there. This is all news to me. This is this Stephon Clark shooting. And we don't know everything at this point by any stretch of the imagination, but it certainly doesn't look good for police. It looks like another unarmed young man has been killed by police, and I'm curious as to how it's all going to play out. Want to keep an eye on it.
And according to killedbypolice.net, there have been 316 people killed by police thus far in 2018.
That doesn't mean they were unarmed. So
correct.
In a country
just
this large,
pointing out yep. the number. Last year there were 1,193 that we know of, and I say that we know of because there's no requirement that police keep records of whenever they kill someone.
I think that we've gotten better about putting that together because it usually hits the news. They can count it now. So the internet's getting better and better at counting
right,
this number.
That's what the people behind that website, killedbypolice.net, do is they scour the internet. They have people that send info to them whenever they wind up reading reports.
Yeah, I think that law enforcement in this country needs to make it a real mandate for themselves to make it a goal that they're going to cut down on the amount of killings of citizens.
Right.
Like, look, I understand some of these people need shooting, but if you can cut this number, the question I would have for you is, do all of them need shooting? Can we cut that number in half? Because I'm pretty sure the stories that come across my desk, and obviously I'm going to get the big news stories, but the stories right. that come across my desk, not so much.
Yeah.
So anyway,
what I'm disheartened about, I'm trying to think of, well, a solution, right?
Yeah.
I saw Stephon's brother, Stevante Clark,
okay.
go into a city council meeting.
It's going to be really confusing to have two kids, one named Stephon, one named Stevante. I mean, the name's pretty similar from, when you're starting it off, Steh, right? Like, you don't know who's getting yelled at there.
Yeah, like George Foreman, for example.
I think they probably call those kids by their middle names, but all of his kids are named George Foreman.
I know when I was growing up, my dad, my stepmom, both would wind up calling me and my brother not only both of our names, but also all of our cousins before figuring out which one we were.
Yeah. I
Rob, Daryl, Steve, Scott, whoever you are,
yep.
come here.
Yeah, I teased my mother that for years I thought my name was John Doug Mark, which is my two uncles' names, and then mine.
So trying to think of a solution, and I usually just go, I get angry, and I think about, violent solutions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tough situation. You get frustrated, your blood pressure goes up, and obviously cooler heads must prevail in a situation like this because anything else isn't going to really work.
Stevante went into the meeting. He, I think, looked terrible. He would put on a pair of sunglasses. He was dancing, chanting his brother's name.
What meeting are we talking about?
At Sacramento City Council.
He was wearing sunglasses and dancing at a Sacramento City Council meeting.
There was a what I believe was a city councilor, maybe city clerk, was making a statement. A statement basically, condemning. Unlawful killing
uh-huh.
and tragic situations. And then you hear somebody in the crowd starts up a chant. Stephon Clark! Stephon Clark!
Yep.
A lot of people join in. A young man walks down into the center. It's sort of a big bowl.
Yeah. Auditorium kind of feel to it.
Yep. He walks down. He's chanting his brother. This is Stevante Clark. He's chanting his brother's name. He puts on a pair of sunglasses. He starts dancing.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't appear to be grieving. Maybe Stevante grieves differently than I do.
Yeah.
And then he approaches the guy who's speaking. He turns his back to him, and he hops up to take a seat on the guy's podium,
uh-huh.
chanting his brother's name.
Generally just being disruptive during the meeting.
Yes.
Exactly.
I'm watching video now, and obviously I don't have the audio, but yeah, it's just being disruptive.
Yeah, we can't play, because of FCC rules, we can't just play audio that we haven't had a chance to vet and go through.
Right, and the video that I'm watching is from CNN, so chances are there's not any obscenities, but yeah, it's just disruption. And he looks fairly young, this Devontae Clark individual.
Yeah, well, it's unlikely that that behavior will result in some kind of solution, but I understand his upset surrounding it all. And if you've got thoughts, the number's 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Daryl, you brought in an article that I wanted to start the show with, but I felt like we had to go with this. It is from Time Magazine about colleges, and apparently they're making the claim that...
Well, let me just jump into the article.
All right.
The author here, author is William Stixrud, co-author of The Self-Driven Child, Three Children?
3 minutes.
Ah, okay. I just happened to see you holding up three
fingers. That's what I do
fingers.
As a professional broadcaster. I hold up the amount of minutes we have left in the segment. Please go
yes,
ahead.
Yes, I have a clock in front of me.
Excellent. I'm going to do my job.
He says... I've never seen you hold fingers up before.
Well, pay more attention.
When my daughter...
The sparks fly.
This from the author. He says, when my daughter, Jora, was in high school, she went to a talk I gave on the adolescent brain, during which I pointed out that high school grades don't predict success very well.
Yeah, I bet that's true. Yeah.
On the way home, she said, great talk, Dad, but I bet you don't really believe that bit about grades. I bet he doesn't believe it
internally, but yes, go ahead.
He says, to prove it, I offered to pay her $100 if she got a C on her next report card in any subject. We've all heard the familiar anxiety-induced nostrums that a screw-up in high school will follow you for the rest of your life. That okay. If you don't get into Harvard or Yale, you'll never reach the C-suite. I don't know what the C-suite is.
Corner.
Ah, okay. Is that supposed to be good?
Yeah, yes, the corner
used
suite
to be
will,
the corner office. Now
corner
it's the
office
corner
will
suite.
Get you two sets of windows, two walls of windows, so you can look out and have two different views.
Ah, okay. See, I've never worked in an office building, so I don't know.
Oh, I always my view was the inside of a cubicle every time.
Okay. He continues that the path to success is narrow, and you'd better not take one false step. Again, this is what people are always taught. He says, I've come to think of this unfounded belief system as what we psychologists call a shared delusion.
Yeah.
So why don't we tell the kids the truth about success?
Because we want them to get good grades.
We could start with the fact that only a third of adults hold degrees from a four-year college, or that you'll do equally well in terms of income, job satisfaction, and life satisfaction, whether you go to an elite private college or a less selective state-run university.
Okay, so I got some problems with the first factoid there that one-third of adults have college diplomas. One-third of adults are probably all kinds of different things. Unhappy, unsuccessful, that's meaningless. The number, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. I just hate the notion that these kids are being saddled with debt for nothing.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warden.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Free Talk Live. Call in, talk about whatever's on your mind. We're talking about college. And, well, I'll let Daryl get back into it. But my concern surrounds the amount of money that young people are saddled with as far as debt goes
right, and,
in this country.
There are more facts that he wants kids to know. You cut me off before I got through all of them.
Well, I didn't cut you off. The clock did, and sorry, can't help you there.
Now, I think I want to stop you there before we let Daryl finish his story, because I think Daryl's story is dumb. Because guess what, guys? I was one of the world's biggest high school failures, and look where I wound up.
What, you meeting the
limited
janitor?
Right in this room with you two guys. I didn't get anywhere. And kids, you should get A's, and your life will be easier because of it. Also, I want to talk about race, which is more important than Daryl's dumb story.
All right. $6 shirts. If you've got a closet full of plain T-shirts, and you wish that you had some shirts that had some clever and witty sayings on it, but you've only got $6 and you refuse to buy from people who aren't libertarians, well, I got some news for you. $6shirts.com has a gigantic selection. It's huge. How many, Daryl? Any idea? Hundreds of thousands?
Dozens upon dozens upon dozens.
Okay. A witty selection, a selection of witty and clever T-shirts.
I forget what I was going to wind up saying for the point. An infinite amount of dozens is still dozens.
Yeah, well, that's useful. So if you
so when I say that they have dozens upon dozens, it could be an infinite amount, but obviously it's a finite number.
It's a huge selection.
It's huge.
$6shirts.com, and they'll help make you an exciting person. All for as low as $6 a piece. Actually, they get lower than that, don't they?
They do have a tea time deal.
Yeah, for $4.
That's a daily special for $4. Some of their shirts are more expensive. They also have tank tops. They've got sweatshirts. You name it, they probably can do it.
Use coupon code FTL for 10% off. They accept Bitcoin. $6shirts.com. $6shirts.com.
So jumping back into the truth. So
list the facts that we had before we went out.
Yes. He says we could start with the fact that only 1/3 of adults hold a degree from a 4-year college.
Not useful information.
Actually, it is useful information.
Well,
because, again, he's debunking the myth that high school students are told, you have to go to college.
Well,
you have to have a college degree.
So I think that I'm more interested in what correlates to success than what correlates into sort of 1/3 of people have college degrees. So what? Go ahead.
Again, he's pointing
out
it's
a fact, but it's not particularly useful. Please go ahead.
No, it is particularly useful.
Okay.
Again, high school students are told you must go to college and you must graduate.
Sure. They're also told the world's full of losers. So that only it serves to bolster it. There's plenty of people with degrees out there that are wiping bars down.
Yes.
That are in the second bottom or second to bottom quintiles.
Excellent. So you agree a college degree is not particularly useful.
Agreed, but that's not a useful.
That's the point he's trying to make here, Mark.
It's not a useful fact. Please go on
it
with the rest.
It is a useful
All
fact.
Right. I hear that he thinks so.
He continues. Next fact is you can do equally well in terms of income, job satisfaction, and life satisfaction whether you go to an elite private college or a less selective state-run university.
I think that's hugely useful.
Or that there are as many occupations throughout America where people can make a good living, many of which do not require a college degree.
Agreed. So I think the first and most important fact here is that many people strive their, the thinking starts immediately when the kid's born. Will this child go to Yale? Will they have the opportunity to go to Yale? I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine from when I was a kid, and I stopped off at his house in Virginia on the way driving down to Florida one time. My kid with me, his kid's there. He's a homeschooler. We were unschoolers. He wants to know, well, if you're doing this unschooling thing, what about colleges? Will they be able to get into an elite college? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't really care about an elite college. I think it's a big waste of time, frankly.
Right. And the last two facts that he has here tie directly into this first one that you say is pointless, where he says you can make a good living without needing a college degree, which ties into only 1/3 of adults have a 4-year college degree.
Here's what I'd like to hear is some facts that back up my point that you don't need a college degree unless you're going to be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, or a college professor. And by the way, don't be a college professor. There are a lot of people trying to be college professors. So if you're going to do one of these three careers, I recommend college. Other than that, you really need to think long and hard about whether or not this is the choice you want to make. And I think young people are the worst qualified to make these choices. They're the best qualified to decide what they're passionate about, and that's important. But Eckerd College, from near where I'm from, sells a lot of degrees in marine biology to people that want to swim with dolphins as a living. They're not using those degrees.
Right.
There's a lot of people who have tried to work for Free Talk Live. They don't understand how this business, this organization works, but regardless of that, with communications degrees. Pointless. I don't care if you've got a bachelor's in communication. Do not care.
Continuing on, he says, I'm not against being a good student, and there are clear advantages to doing well in school, but you don't need to be a top student or go to a highly selective college to have a successful and fulfilling life.
You know what they called the person who graduated bottom of their class in medical school?
What?
Doctor.
Huh. Very good.
Oh, right, because they still got a doctorate.
That's right. Bottom of their class, still a doctor. And once you're out there, it really doesn't matter. You know, maybe you're not as good of a doctor, and maybe college would indicate that, but maybe it doesn't, because how you do in high school or college or these sorts of things doesn't necessarily indicate how you're going to do in life. And that's what the guy's trying to make the point all along. I was a mediocre, bright kid. I just didn't apply myself and, you know, tried to wing it through tests and stuff like that. So I got grades, you know, up and down the spectrum.
Did you go to the gifted school with Ian?
No, we made fun of those kids.
He continues, the path to success
is
not nearly as narrow as we like to think. We've all heard the stories of the college dropout who went on to found a wildly successful company. He says, I myself was a C-plus student in high school who flunked out of grad school. At one point, I went for 20 weeks without turning in a single assignment. I often tell the underachievers I see in my practice, top that. Long story short, I managed to do pretty well in my life, and I credit my failure in graduate school with leading me to a career more in line with my skill set. The problem with the stories we're telling our kids is that they foster fear and competition. The false paradigm affects high-achieving kids, for whom a rigid view of the path to success creates unnecessary anxiety, and for the low-achieving kids, many of whom conclude at a young age that they will never be successful and adopt a "why try at all" attitude.
And I was having a conversation today with, I'm at a table with these people are far more degreed than I am and bright. And I'm making the point right there in front of them. I haven't used anything from high school, anything that I learned in high school in my working life, except typing. And it was an electorate. Thank you, Mrs. Bird. May you rest in peace.
A couple of years ago, I was in a play, and it was a fine play. One night after the show, we went to have dinner together, and one of the other actors, his sister came, and she brought her husband. And he was very well off. He was, they had built their own theater and so forth. I think I don't remember what business he was in, but he was doing real well for himself. Talked about how he was going to do some acting, but he couldn't read, and so he couldn't read cue cards. And so
he's a wealthy man that couldn't read.
Yes. So he didn't follow that path.
Fascinating.
My granddad couldn't read, ran his own business for 50 years.
Yeah, well, they'll throw him in jail now once they find out that he's not keeping his books properly. The number, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. It's a live Sunday edition. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
Call in and talk about what you want. We're talking about college. And I don't want to make it seem like I hate the notion of college. I think that there are certainly some people that need to go to college. By the way, I want to add to my list early childhood education. Educators of all sorts, not just college professors, probably are going to need to go to college or whatever. But I'd like to point out that the vast majority of high school is crap and not worth much. So there you go. I went through that. College, I only did a little bit of that. So, you know, and life's been all right. I'm relatively happy, you know, as happy as I can be. I'm kind of grumpy. My number, 603.
No.
No, no. 855-450-3733. I wonder what number I would have given.
Probably your cell phone, which you generally try doing at least once a week.
It's the office number, but yeah.
Mark, for any speciality, you should have some special training.
Tell me of the speciality you're referring to.
Cutting hair.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's not college, though. I mean, it's school.
No, but that's school. But that's what college is. It's just that now, yeah, there's a lot of, I guess there's a core group of courses that are pretty much prescribed for everyone to get a college degree, and you're saying that a lot of that is useless, like English.
Right. When was the last time you diagrammed a sentence?
It's been a long time, probably middle school.
Yeah, high school for me. I can tell you, Daryl is not, when he's running this marathon in November, he's not going to be diagramming sentences.
I can't tell you the last time I did diagram a sentence, but I could tell you the last time I went for a run. Was yesterday, as a training run for a half marathon I'm doing in about 7 weeks. And in November, I'll be running in the New York City Marathon on Team Innocence Project. I accepted a spot on Team Innocence Project because I'm a passionate supporter of their work. And actually, when I say I accepted a spot, I mean I applied and was ecstatic when I got the email saying, we would like to have you on the team. Since they were founded in 1992, they've helped 200 people who have been wrongly convicted get exonerated. And with your help, the Innocence Project can help even more people who have been wrongly convicted. As part of Team Innocence Project, I'm raising awareness about wrongful convictions and raising funds to help free the innocent. I've already paid the race registration fee, the travel to New York, that's covered, the lodging is covered, but what I need to secure my spot on Team Innocence Project in the New York City Marathon is to raise $3,500 by November 1st. And to date, I'm just over $1,000. I've got about $1,000 of matching funds left sitting on the table that are waiting on you to wind up throwing some money in so that it can be matched dollar for dollar.
So once you're there, that's at $3,000?
Once I get the remaining $1,000,
you'll get matching of $1,000.
No, I've got a total of $1,500 matching.
Okay.
About 500 of that has already been matched. Okay. I just haven't received the actual matching funds yet.
Okay.
But once I raise another $1,000, I'll be at the $3,500 goal once the matching funds are collected.
Great.
And again, you can go to run.freetalklive.com, donate, and all of the funds that you donate through run.freetalklive.com go directly to the Innocence Project, because the platform has it set up to where you pay the credit card fees. That way, nothing is taken out from what goes to the charity.
Johnny Ray, we were talking about post-secondary education, mm-hmm. and, say, barbershops. One thing that I think of are barber licensing. One thing I think that's sort of been lost over time is the apprenticeship out there.
Yeah.
Imagine for a second that you don't want to pay the money to go to barbering school. You're not old enough to go to barbering school. Whatever thing might keep you out of barbering school. Like, why can't a middle schooler, and, you know, many educators are of the belief that essentially middle school is just day prison because kids aren't good at learning academics at that time. Whatever. I'm not one of these educators, so I don't know. But that's what I've heard. And maybe it would be better if they, you know, some of them were able to go to barber shops and sweep up some hair, get some idea of how to cut hair, you know, start watching, and then maybe, you know, doing a little bit of work here and there, like, you know, cleaning up the edges, the easiest parts of hair cutting.
So I think I know the answer to why that's not necessarily allowed, because the people that are currently in the barbering profession, they want to protect their own business by making sure that new barbers wind up going through the same process they went through.
I think that mostly it's the people that run the schools are the ones that are on the licensing committees.
True, but there was a hearing to create a committee to look at regulations in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And the room was full of cosmetologists who were in there signing against the bill, thinking that if this bill goes through, then new cosmetologists are never going to have to get any training, and they're just going to be putting eyeshadow on anybody. And one girl said, without regulations, I would just be hurting people.
Well, that's nuts.
That's a psychopath who thinks that, oh, well, if you government didn't exist, I would just be randomly hurting people.
That's often what they think. I always like to bring up the ASE certification for brakes, people who do brakes. I would say that brakes...
All manner of auto repair.
Yeah, ASE does all of it.
ASE certification.
But if you do brakes, you should, like, your shop could or could not have ASE certification. So we have a voluntary certification for people who do brakes. Brakes, I would say, are the most important part of a vehicle.
Yes.
Because if everything else is broken, you should have your brakes work so that you could stop the vehicle and not harm other people. I believe brakes to be the most important. But so here you have a 5,000-pound killing machine whose most important feature is fixed by somebody who's voluntarily certified. Beat that cosmetologists and dental assistants.
Yeah. Or floral arrangers down in Louisiana that wind up having to go through.
Louisiana doesn't count. I'm sorry. It's not real life. Louisiana is some kind of mirror world full of statists and weirdos.
But if you die in Louisiana, you die in real life.
That much is true. Yeah.
And floral arrangers wind up needing like twice as much education as police officers in Louisiana.
Mark, when you're talking about how these four jobs, I think you said, you need to go to college for, you're thinking about the real world. And I'm always thinking about the ideal anarchist world that I visit in my dreams.
Yeah.
And there, basically everything would be apprenticeship, like you say, all the way up to the doctors. There wouldn't be... The
doctors were, when there were GPs in this world, there was an apprenticeship program for doctors, too.
Basically, if school is the right setting, a classroom, then that's what you would get because that's what the market gives you when you have people competing with each other. You choose the one that works the best. And it would go, all the way up from barbers to janitors to doctors. Lawyers wouldn't really exist the way that they do now because...
You'd need contracts. And they would probably write those. They would probably be indecipherable as they are today, sadly. And that's one of the sort of difficulties, and I wouldn't be able to speak to that. I think that as we've entered a modern society, kids are given a lot of choices. And in many cases, not all of them, but many cases, they're just not qualified to make those decisions. I didn't figure out what I wanted to do in real life until I got a job in radio.
Right, and not only are 17, 18-year-olds not necessarily in a position to necessarily be making decisions of here's what I want to do for the rest of my life, but they're not being told the truth about the rest of their life. And the author of this article says, I've asked various school administrators why they don't tell kids the truth about college. They respond by shrugging and saying, even if we did, no one would believe it.
Believe what? That college isn't particularly useful or that it doesn't matter which one you go to?
Both.
Okay.
He continues, one administrator confided to me, we could get angry calls and letters from parents who do believe it.
Yeah.
If their children understands the truth, they would not work hard in school and would have second-class lives. Many adults worry that if their kids knew that grades in school aren't highly predictive of success in life, they'd lose motivation to apply themselves and aim high. He says, in fact, the opposite is true. In my 32 years of working with kids.
It's an agreed-upon lie that kids need to do well in school. Is that the idea?
That's basically what it sounds like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, as a parent, if my kid was going to regular school, I would consider... It's hard not to think of the grades as the predictor of how well they're going to do and what kind of person they're going to be. So I would probably even fall prey to this, too. I don't know. What do you think? 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com is your premier source for everything Bitcoin related. get help buying Bitcoins or choosing a Bitcoin wallet at Bitcoin.com. Read the latest news or even engage with the community on the Bitcoin Forum at Bitcoin.com. You can even find places to spend your Bitcoin or play online games with the cryptocurrency. The source for all your Bitcoin needs and news, Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. It's a live Sunday edition. You can call in and, well, you know, it's Free Talk Live. You can talk about what you want to talk about here. We were discussing college in the last hour and sort of the, you know, necessity and not so much of college, the costs that go into it. And perhaps I think the biggest takeaway from this this article is that it really doesn't matter that much which school you go to. That it's not really going to be a big predictor of your success in life. I thought that was fascinating.
I think it is for the elite. They're not gonna have.
But they're
going
to go to those schools anyway.
Yeah, they're going to be how they are regardless.
And what's success for somebody who starts out with all the money in the world? I don't know. Like if you
success would be not losing all of it.
That would be that, yeah. I don't know if those people are the best prepared because, frankly, those who inherit money are, you know, don't do particularly well with it.
Right, but you could still wind up becoming president of the United States. Just ask the orange guy.
Or George Bush was born quite wealthy. George W. Bush. W.
Well, I'm just thinking of, you know, somebody that was born, inherited a lot of money, lost all of it, and still became president. At least George W. Bush, to my knowledge, didn't wind up filing bankruptcy multiple times, although the dumbass did trade Sammy Sosa to the Cubs when he was running the Rangers.
Did. Yeah, that seems bad. Did Donald Trump file personal bankruptcy or business bankruptcy?
Business bankruptcy four times.
I mean, businesses go bankrupt. You open them, some of them work,
right.
Some of them don't.
There's also an interview he did one time where he said that he joked to his daughter while looking at a bum, you know the difference between me and him? That guy's $8 billion richer than I am.
I've heard that story with multiple people as the guy saying it. So, and, you know, it's true. Maybe lots of people have lots of wealthy people have debt, and couldn't speak to it.
If you're less than $20 trillion in debt, you're doing better than the United States federal government.
Yeah, that much is true. They're all predicated upon debt. Daryl, jaywalking? We have new jaywalking technology?
We have the technology, and or at least some police departments apparently have the technology. Story from the New York Post. And actually, this is out of China, even though it's being reported in the New York Post. They say jaywalkers in China are not to be named, shamed, and slapped with an instant, or rather are to be named, shamed, and slapped with an instant SMS fine. SMS is the text messaging thing. And it says it's all thanks to a cutting-edge artificial intelligence.
So if they're getting it there, we're going to have here over here relatively soon is the claim, right?
Probably. I don't know how the whole Fourth Amendment thing would wind up standing in the way, but it doesn't seem to stand in the way of the red light camera tickets.
Right.
Or the speeding camera tickets.
I've got to say I'm pro-jaywalking. Now, I don't want somebody getting out in front of my car or whatever, but here in New Hampshire, and I know many places around the United States, if you're inside of the crosswalk, whether there's a light or not, if you're just inside of the crosswalk, you've got the right of way. I'm of the opinion the crosswalk is the, this is the area for geriatrics, women with pushing baby buggies, families where a two-year-old is whose hand is held is in tow. But the rest of us can pretty much get across the street without too much trouble. I know.
But even in a crosswalk, in certain municipalities, if the light doesn't say walk,
right,
and you then you're run jaywalking. Across yeah. in the crosswalk, that's it jaywalking. Is jaywalking.
Yeah, that's jaywalking if you're not doing it at the right time. But I'm of the opinion that, A, I don't need to be – I don't want to be in the crosswalk, and I don't want to push – I certainly don't want to push that button, you know, the button that goes beep, boop, beep, boop, or whatever makes the noise so that, you know, all the traffic stops.
Gives people red lights.
Yeah, and this is the only way to get across the street. I just don't need that. Yes, I think there are people who need it, but I don't. I'll get across the street. It'll be fine. I don't need your help, cars. I'll get through. You know, just stay in your lane. Don't run across the double yellow line here. Let me go to the middle, and then I can cross from there. Like, I'll be fine. I can get across the street without all that trouble. And here's some news for you. It'll be better for the cars. It's better for the walk. It's better for everybody. If you just leave me alone to my own devices, I'll get across the street. Now, somebody who's sauntering, especially in the crosswalk, just like, I got the right of way, and I guess you're just going to have to slow down, you big murdering vehicle. I hate him. I hate that. A grown man walking slow in a crosswalk, I swear, it ought to be a misdemeanor.
Now, Mark, I don't know how often you come into Keene and drive around downtown.
Often enough.
Have you seen the guy, the one-legged guy in the wheelchair?
No.
Who will, if he sees vehicles, and I've seen him do this, where he'll start pushing himself backwards and then go forward and then push him, and he just takes as long as he can. But if there's no cars, he just scurries right across the road. But if there's a car, he'll just push himself backwards and take as long as he can getting across.
Oh, it sounds like a really great guy. The good news about that is you may have to wait for him for 45 seconds, but he has to live with himself for the rest of his life, and that's got to stink.
Crosswalks, yeah, I think crosswalks are anti-civilizational. I think the roads are for cars, basically, and that's it. And if you're a pedestrian, then you do not have the right of way. You're at least number two to everybody else on the road. And if you need to cross the road, you're just going to have to find the best place to do it and cross there.
The right. reality is
the city we live in has so many crosswalks. It's a nightmare, and it's not the way people in the 21st century should live.
So let me give some advice that I got when I worked for the airline, and it was actually one of the rules. Although they didn't exactly put it this way, always yield to things bigger than you.
I think that's really great advice.
So if you're walking and somebody is driving one of the baggage carts or some other thing, you yield to them. If you're in one of those things and there's an airplane coming, you yield to that. So you always yield to something that is larger than you.
My opinion is that if you're going to be doing crossing the street and you're of the opinion the car is going to stop for you and not run you over, you need to keep eye contact. You need to be looking towards the windshield of the next vehicle that could possibly kill you. And you want to make sure you understand what that person's doing if you've got some kind of eye contact or whatever. And let's not be lax in getting across the street. I mean,
right.
You know, you can hurry up a little bit. You don't have to sprint or anything like that. And yes, health issues are a concern, but I'm just talking about people with normal health conditions.
Yep.
I would consider myself in that group. I used to have a lower back issue, and there are times when I can't, in the past when I haven't been able to move very fast at all, but the vast majority of times, even with a lower back issue, I can get across the street and everything, you know, is just fine.
You know, we never heard back from that city that got rid of all of their traffic signs.
There have been several of them in Europe.
Okay, well, I'm thinking of one in Germany, and what it promoted drivers making eye contact with each other instead of just staring at the signs, staring at the light, and then when it turns green, putting your foot on the pedal and going.
Yeah,
people were communicating.
Mindless,
and accidents were reduced. The story that I remember seeing this in is from 2008, so it's pretty old.
Yep.
But they even put a children's park in a place where they wanted to slow the traffic down.
Well, I'll just use the kids as like human shields.
Yeah, and apparently it worked.
One thing, so I think that the sort of giving pedestrians right of way and making sure that everybody knows what the signage is, that the pedestrians have the right of way, it teaches pedestrians this sort of unrealistic view of the world. because, you know, they get all indignant.
Everybody will stop for you and do whatever you want, Sarah.
Right, and they should stop for you, but if they don't, you're going to die. And you don't want to be in a situation, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're going to die. And if you get this expectation built up, well, it's deadly. It's a deadly expectation. 855-450-3733. Are we all wrong on this? 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live. Live, we're talking about, I guess there's new technology that's using facial recognition software to catch jaywalkers, and it's probably coming to, at some point, a municipality near you that makes you uncomfortable. The number's 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Sunday, live Sunday edition. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
The FDA is taking 5 to 10 years off of your life and is responsible for the death of untold millions of people since its creation. Find out about why the FDA should be abolished from libertarian author and longtime medical researcher Dr. Mary Ruart in her new book, Death by Regulation. The book is on pre-order, and we want to make a big splash on April the 10th when it's released. Dr. Ruart's offering $60 in bonuses for this $27 book. More pre-orders means a higher ranking on the Amazon charts. By the way, we've read others of her books, and she's a great author. A higher rank means more people will be exposed to this book, its important message, the libertarian message generally. This is activism, so you can go to Death by Regulation. .us to pre-order your copy today, deathbyregulation.us to order your copy today. Let's go to the phones and to the fun. We've got Mortified Penguin calling in on Skype.
Mortified Penguin, greetings, what's on your mind? Greetings, my friends. How's it going tonight?
All's well. What's on your mind?
All right, and yeah, shout out to the Discord trolls over in LRN Discord.
Here, here.
I have a couple questions for Mr. W. Perry tonight. First of all, if you don't mind, I told Dennis, then if you do, what does the W stand for?
It stands for W.
Lame.
I've got a friend that's convinced that it stands for wombat, so I'll just go with that.
Wombat. Okay, great. I'll take that. And another question about your running. Obviously the running and the marathon prep is going great. I can't ever seem to get myself motivated to run. I actually tend to sprint. I kind of like the like a cross country kind of thing, but okay. I hate running. I can never get myself to do it. Like, what do you do to get yourself motivated?
You know, I hated running until a couple of years ago, and then I just started doing it. So I don't know if there's a way that I can answer the question. But one thing that I've found that sort of helps keep me motivated, not get me motivate. So if you're having trouble just finding the motivation, I don't know. But maybe have a goal in mind of you want to run a local 5K or you want to wind up, okay, you know, competing in an event. And then hopefully that will then encourage you to where, well, I want to do good in this thing. So then you'll find a training program maybe.
And Daryl, you never joined clubs or ran with groups of people, did you? You were always going solo.
You just want to lose weight, right?
Right. So it started out just a way to, and actually I didn't even run until I got tricked into doing a triathlon, okay, where I just misunderstood what the French Canadian gym owner had said. And so I signed up for a triathlon. I thought she said we're going to do it on the roof. So I thought there was going to be like a kiddie pool and something, but she said we're going to do it as a group. And there were group trainings, and because I was still recovering from a knee injury, I wasn't able to really do the group trainings. So the triathlon was just absolutely brutal. I thought I was going to die like a dozen times, and then the swimming wound up ending. And then the biking and the running weren't horrible. Got it done, and I finished, and I didn't die, so that was one of the goals. But then it was several months later when I even really tried to run again, and I just wanted to, a year ago, I wanted to be able to run a 5K without having any walk period during the 5K. And then I wound up at, you know, what, the end of the fall, running an entire half marathon with no walking.
What seems to happen to runners, and I think to weightlifters to some extent too, and people who generally participate in regular exercise, is that first they do it because they feel like they have to. They want to get some goal. They want to lose some weight. They want to, you know, do a 5K or whatever it is. And then after they've done it regularly for a period of time, then it becomes chemical, right? So you, if you don't run, I'll bet you, you feel this kind of jonesing, like this wish, this
if I don't do some kind of physical exercise, then I wind up not being in a good mental place.
Yeah.
And that there was a couple of weeks ago, actually beginning of the month, when I went for my first real run of the season, because I took January and February as sort of off season, because I did
still
a
running,
lot
though.
Of stuff.
True.
Once a week on a treadmill, because otherwise it was ice and snow outside. I went for like my first real run of the year in like the first week of March, and my ankle and my hamstring and my left leg are feeling kind of bad. Googled the symptoms. Oh, I think I've got some tendonitis in my ankle.
Tendonitis. Two N's. No D. Tendonitis.
It's got a D.
All right. I'll take a look.
You're getting confused with like tinnitus or something.
Yeah. Tinnitus is the thing in the ear. Tendonitis is a tendon problem.
Yes.
And so WebMD says, you know, like rest for about 2 weeks. So for a week and a half.
Looks like you're right.
I did no physical exercise at all. I didn't go to the gym. I didn't do any yoga. I didn't do any running. And I was just not in a good mental place. And
yeah, I'm definitely lifting. I'm definitely there, but I just running. Just I just it's just grueling. I don't know. It's just
lifters rarely run, and runners rarely lift.
Rarely, but all of the training guides that I've seen for how to prepare for any long distance event, they put in there do strength training.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. they will generally say only go to the gym like once or twice a week. I'm generally going 3 or 4 times. I'm not exactly doing it by the books, although I am following a training plan for this upcoming half marathon.
I'm for that, though.
Anything else?
I'm with you going to the gym. Well, I, like I said, to supplement my my lifting, I kind of run like short distance sprints. I kind of run for speed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I kind of cross-country thing, so I like running on terrain. But, I mean,
and
I want to get to that place where I got to run, and if I don't run, I feel miserable. And I still kind of do, but still can't get myself, I don't know. Just need to get up at home.
I want to recommend two fitness podcasts that I listen to.
Right.
One of them, they're both weekly. One of them is called So This Is Fitness, and the other is How Was Your Run Today?
There you go, Modified Penguin. Thanks for the call.
All right, take care, guys.
Yep. I feel remiss if I didn't mention it. I started doing jiu-jitsu about a year ago. One of the reasons I did it was I'd stopped lifting weights some time ago, and I didn't want to start doing it again. It's boring to pick things up, move them around, and put it back down. I wasn't into it. So I started going to jiu-jitsu class, and you'll definitely get some cardio work out of it. It's not the most efficient by
right.
any stretch of the imagination. It's intended to teach you self-defense, not intended to give you a workout, but it definitely is effective in that arena. So if one thing doesn't seem like a good idea to you, try a group class, try a variety of things. Different things work for different people.
Yes.
We don't normally do fitness advice, but here you go. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE, or lrn.fm is our username on Skype.
It is Free Talk Live. You can bring up anything.
Zencash is an end-to-end encrypted system with zero-knowledge technology over which communications, data, or value can be securely transmitted and stored. With over 7,500 secure nodes, Zencash has one of the most distributed node systems of any cryptocurrency. Zencash is a platform for cryptocurrency and communications built by voluntarists for voluntarists, with the ideas of voluntary interaction being written into the white paper no less than half a dozen times. Learn more at Zencash.com. That's Zencash.com.
Free Talk Live. The number for you to call in is 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. And as evidenced by the call last segment, you can call in and talk about whatever you want. We'll step down from whatever conversation we're having, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. The caller wanted to talk about Daryl's fitness
regime.
Yeah, that's right. And, well, Daryl's not the only one who works out around here, people, just because he talks about it all the time.
You wait. You do jujitsu. I don't do anything at all.
Yeah. Well, you've got a more active job than I do. You know, I mean, you're a janitor. You're the Liberty janitor, so you got to lift some things. You got to move some. You got to mop some floors. You got to sweep some things and
That's
all that
true.
Stuff. So you're standing, moving. Those are good things. Whereas I'm trying to sell radio ads and maybe do some cryptocurrency trading or whatever. Yeah. I'm sitting.
Yeah.
Zencash. Speaking of cryptocurrency trading, Zencash is one that I'm pretty bullish on. Prices are quite low right now. And
bullish is the good thing, right?
Bullish is the good thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Charges like a bull. I believe that it's going to do quite well in the next 3 to 6 months. That's a belief. It's one backed up by my the portfolio that I manage. So you can check it out, Zencash. It's a very secure network, 8,000 secure nodes. And it's one of the most distributed node systems in cryptocurrency. It's a platform for cryptocurrency, which is, by the way, very private. And it's also built by voluntarists for voluntarists, with the idea of voluntary interaction being written right into the white paper no less than half a dozen times. It's one of these proof of work cryptocurrencies. And you can either sort of just buy, sell, and trade with it, or you can do it completely privately and nobody knows what you've been doing. Zencash.com to go get started. Zencash.com. Daryl, we were on this article about facial recognition and jaywalking. I don't think I let you get very far into it.
Yeah, I basically got two sentences in. Apparently in China, jaywalkers, at least in the southeastern city of Shenzhen, are getting text messages with a fine for jaywalking. They're using some artificial intelligence.
How do they know your telephone number to send you a text message?
Everybody in China, I think, is all they're all on Weibo, and that's like you get a citizen score on that. They've got some kind of a partnership with the Chinese state.
So the article here says if you jaywalk, a CCTV camera will scan your face and flash it up on the huge screens for all to see, according to the South China Morning Post. If that wasn't embarrassing enough,
yeah, who cares?
There are now plans to ping offenders' phones with a quick-fire fine as soon as they violate the rule.
How much?
Doesn't say this far up in the article. The AI company behind the billboards in Telefusion is in talks with mobile phone networks and local social media platforms to enforce the new system. The firm is reportedly speaking with WeChat, China's all-encompassing messaging app, which locals use for everything from work and personal chat to mobile payments and blogging, and Sina Weibo, the country's answer to Twitter. WeChat currently boasts over 1 billion users compared to China's 1.3 billion population. Wang Jun, Intellifusion's director of marketing solutions, told the South China Morning Post, "Jaywalking has always been an issue in China. A combination of technology and psychology can greatly reduce instances of jaywalking and will prevent repeat offenders."
I imagine it's a much bigger deal where, I mean, I haven't seen jaywalking be too much of a problem basically anywhere but I've been, but major cities.
Yes.
In major cities, you got to stop the pedestrians from walking so that the cars get their chance to go. But other than that, I think that the pedestrian traffic moves along pretty nicely when there aren't any cars there and people just jaywalk across the street.
Yes.
You got to look both ways. But that's what I think people should be doing anyway. I think pedestrians should be looking at the road as a dangerous place, not a place where they're entitled to be.
And most major cities that I've been, they wind up having pedestrian traffic going the same time as cars.
Yes.
In the same direction, whereas the small towns, no. Nobody can walk for the next 5 minutes.
Right.
And then everybody gets to walk every direction for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I don't, that doesn't
Which is just absolutely ridiculous. If cars are going down First Avenue, you should be able to cross the cross street while cars are going down First Avenue.
Yeah.
Continuing on with this article, it says in the 10 months prior to February of this year, a whopping 13,930 jaywalkers had their mugshots displayed on the screens at, well, it says mugs, but, you know, they're taking the facial recognition picture, which is basically a mugshot, and posting it on these giant displays in town. Nearly 14,000 people have had their pictures displayed on screens at one busy intersection.
I bet that is a very interesting video to watch. Let's just watch the video of, you know, the feed of people's faces who have jaywalked.
And then while you're distracted by the picture of all of the faces, you get run over by a car.
Yeah.
The move is part of a bigger surveillance push in China to track local citizens. And it's being powered by a network of 170 million CCTV cameras.
170 million. I wonder what those cost to install.
A bunch of money.
Many of
which are being fitted with AI, including facial recognition. These security cams are already being used to regulate traffic and pinpoint drivers who break other rules. An estimated 400 million more security cameras will be installed over the next 3 years, according to a recent report from the BBC.
Well, there you go. Facial recognition jaywalking cameras on the way. They say that these cameras do other things, like I presume catch people going through red lights and that whole gamut.
Probably.
It looks like
here's what we need. Here's what we need. And I'm saying this with tongue firmly planted in cheek because I am not in support of police body cameras because of the roving surveillance problems. We need facial recognition installed into the police body cameras that are then roving around the city 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Do you see how strange it sounds to say we need roving surveillance cameras? Because libertarians, by and large, oppose these fixed surveillance cameras because of this reason and others. But yet, if you put the surveillance camera on somebody that's just moving around the city constantly, all of a sudden it's better.
Yeah. I agree with you that this was brought up on Free Talk Live before, you know, while we were supporting heavily police body cameras, and I'm not sure that I'm against police wearing cameras.
I've always known you as being a big proponent of the badge cams and so forth.
I like that because I feel like we the citizenry should be able to see what these folks are doing, and it's caught a lot of cops planting evidence up this point. There's been several stories, and I think that's pretty cool. But I think you're absolutely right, Daryl, that between the red light cameras, the speeding cameras, the cops' cameras, the cars, the cameras on the police cars, probably every other government vehicle. Now the police cars have cameras that'll scan your license plate and do all that stuff. Every other government vehicle is going to have a camera soon too. I mean, goodness, we don't want a city worker not having a camera, because then what if they get an accident and it's not their fault or it is their fault? I don't know what.
Right.
And then all these cameras, we're not very far from this, are we, people? All these cameras are now linked together in one big sort of Skynet AI situation.
And, panopticon.
Yeah, a panopticon is a perfect word for that. And they're watching us all the time. They've got the facial recognition, so they know what they got your license plate. They know where you're driving, where you're walking, what you're doing. Everybody, all the time, putting together your patterns.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't at least a pilot program with facial recognition software for badge cams and so forth.
855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live. Talk Live. call in and talk about what you would like to talk about here on Free Talk Live. We're talking about the Panopticon, as Johnny Ray said.
Yeah, but that's not my word. You don't know it just because you're dumb. Everybody else knows it.
Everybody else knows it. I'm sure they do. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
Here on Free Talk Live. I just liked it, and I want to make sure you got credit for mentioning it on the air. No good deed goes unpunished. Yeah, no problem at all.
The Panopticon is a type of institutional building and a system of control designed by the English philosopher and social theorist Jeremy Bentham.
It means all-seeing eye. Essentially.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. I mean, we're talking about in China, they're installing these cams that will catch you jaywalking. I suspect that's coming soon to a municipality near you when they've got the cams that are
It'll
on the red light.
It'll probably get exported to the UK before it comes to the US.
They've got more than a million closed circuit cameras there too. I'm just saying all these cams, whether they're on the red light cameras, the, you know, just these jaywalking cams, the cams on the police cars, the cams on the police chests, you know, who knows where else they're going to put cams, wherever they feel like it. They're all going to be hooked in together. They're going to be able to tell right from your license plate. They're going to be able to read your license plate. They're going to be able to see your face. And pretty soon, they're going to know what you do all the time.
And
don't forget, the book, Three Felonies a Day, outlines how everybody breaks the law.
Mark, I just wanted to touch on your support for libertarian solutions involving body cameras. And a couple of weeks ago, I realized that this is just an idea we need to step away from, because if you watch Captain America Civil War, you can see that Robert Downey Jr. is now about 17 or 18 years old. You know what I mean? People can manipulate images and manipulate video, so you can't even trust what you get. So don't go down that road.
Forget Civil War. Look at Rogue One, where an actor who's been dead 27 years...
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't seen
it. Has
that.
A major role. Grand Moff Tarkin is brought back from Star Wars, the New Hope, the original, A New Hope, and CGI'd right into the movie, and it is seamless, nearly seamless. And this, if it's done well in this movie, imagine what it's going to be like in 10 years. And so video.
Well, they've already got the stuff, and we talked about this several weeks ago. Because, well, it's on Pornhub, these things called deep fakes, to yes. where there's computer technology that allows very realistic looking manipulation of videos to where you can put any actor or actress's face on somebody's body to where it looks like Emma Watson or...
Who's that?
She's some actress person.
Hermione Granger.
Yeah, Hermione Granger from the Harry Potter books. Yeah, that's what.
Okay, I don't know who she is. I just know that she's one of the people that they said her face has been put on these. Basically, all of the women from Game of Thrones have had their faces put on.
If they're famous and attractive, they've had their face slapped on, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it looks realistic. It looks like that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's audio technology to where if they have just 20 minutes of someone speaking.
Well, they'll never get that from me.
They can wind up making that person say anything. And it sounds like that person.
Yeah. Well, what kind of world are we entering here? A world where video and audio are completely useless?
You can't even believe the things you see and hear.
Would somebody in the government manipulate your image, your audio, in order to railroad you?
They've already been doing it.
Where? When? Tell me about that.
Prosecutors manipulate things all the time. People get railroaded all the time.
Sure. They'll often leave things out and... yes, that's happened, but I mean, it's a new step to say, hey, underling, put together a video where we can show this person committing this crime so we can get ourselves a sweet conviction.
Right.
Well, they will use evidentiary science that is ridiculous, like some of the burn analysis. people have been convicted of arson and manslaughter for bunk science involving how a building goes up.
Yeah, that's happened.
Hair samples.
Yeah.
This stuff is not as foolproof as you might think by watching police procedurals on ABC.
It's so okay, so true, but what we're doing is dealing with a situation where you know, the state says, we believe this is what happened, here's some evidence, and the jury's sort of like, well, sounds legit, sounds like a legit story, and conviction. In many cases, you won't even get a trial because very few, it's less, far less than 1% of arrests result in a trial in America, far less than 1%. And the one of those that do, 66% of them result in convictions. Now, it doesn't make any sense to me. Clearly, I mean, we are not dealing with a system of angels where people don't make mistakes. So I would say the mistake level is higher than, you know, some small fraction of 1%. Out there, but for whatever reason, juries decide that people who are willing to take their stuff to trial are, by and large, guilty. I don't know. I mean, we've got a broken system, in my opinion, and need something better. I don't think just changing the jury system is going to fix that, though.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the large number of people that wind up taking pleas, and a lot of times people will plead to things that they know they did not commit because they'll get some more serious crime dropped.
Well, yeah, and for one, if you're poor and you're sitting in the pokey, it's kind of, I mean, you know you're not going to get a defense.
Right.
So you might as well plea out, go to jail, start getting your gain time or your probationary, you know, working towards your parole or whatever it's doing rather than sitting in there. I can tell you when I was in jail, that was happening all over the place. People were just taking pleas to get the heck out of there. They'd rather be guilty of something and then getting the game time and doing 20%. This was back in the 80s when I was in jail in Florida. But that's what was happening.
Right.
Things have changed. In Florida, it's an 85% rule now, and I would think that that would have clogged up the system, but apparently not. Now I would presume that they're just offering much lower pleas.
And, you know, let's say the initial charge is felony level and the prosecutor says, hey, we'll drop this down to a misdemeanor. You plead to this other thing. And then it's totally not even the thing you were charged with. And I can't necessarily think of there have been somebody charged initially with, say, possession with intent to traffic. And then, oh, we'll just charge you with possession, but we're going to change it from this to this other thing. And I've heard prosecutors say that people have pled guilty to things they did not commit just to wind up getting a higher charge dropped.
Yeah, it happens all the time. That's just the system as it exists here in the United States and I think around the world probably. But there's a lot more incarceration that goes on in the U.S.,
right, because we have these horrible things called mandatory minimum sentencing.
Why do you think it is, though? I mean, it's not like no other country thought, and it's not like no other country would like to have, you know, more prison guards and a prison industrial complex. It's not like any of them wouldn't have, you know, don't dislike mandatory minimums. You know, whatever it is, they're giving mandatory minimums out. So, you know, gun charges and whatever, and all these other things. It's not like these other countries couldn't fall prey to the prison industrial complex, but for whatever reason, the United States is the country that has.
Right, and the United States is also one of two countries that falls into this whole you know, binary option choice, where most of the rest of the world, they have 4, 5, 6, 7 parties represented in their parliament. The United States is one of two countries with two.
Well, isn't that largely because of the – okay, so the United States was the first constitutional republic, and it still has the same constitution. And the constitution basically sets things up so that it's you know, the way that the voting goes and the way all the rest of the stuff goes makes it so that people just end up more or less feeling like they have to vote for one or two parties.
I know wind up saying that. People say that.
You wrote a book on this.
But if you look at what the Congress makeup was before the government started printing ballots, we had 4, 5, 6, 7 parties represented in Congress. And then the government started printing ballots. And
who printed the ballots before that?
The voters.
The voters?
The political parties.
Okay.
Anybody that wanted to print a ballot could print a ballot.
Okay.
And you would show up and say, here's my ballot. And you would turn in the ballot that either you made yourself or somebody handed you.
Huh.
And now you've got Republicans and Democrats setting the rules for who gets to run against them. And what do you know? They make the rules to where anybody that's not one of them has a very difficult path of getting on the ballot.
Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. Give us a call.
If you want to promote your business, organization, website, or club, radio is a great way to reach a lot of people. And because the ads are low cost, you can reach them a lot more often. Repetition builds reputation, and ads with audio are just more convincing than print or digital. If you need local people, please contact this station. If you can sell nationally, I'd love to help. Free Talk Live is nationally syndicated on more than 170 radio stations, and we have a large and loyal podcast audience. Check out our packages at advertise.freetalklive.com. If you need something custom, contact me, Mark at freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live. It's kicking off the third hour of this live edition of Free Talk Live. If you're listening to us between 7 and 10 Eastern time, you can go ahead and give us a call. What was that, Daryl? It was between 0100 hours and 0300 hours Zulu time?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, pick up the phone. The number is 855-450-3733. Surely there is something that you something in your soul that is so important that you must tell the world. Well, we are the outlet for you. You could post it on Facebook and dozens of people may see it. Or you could call here. Hundreds of thousands could. Check it out. NewYorkPost.com. Apparently, the Brooklyn Museum has sparked an outrage in the black community after tapping a white woman to curate its vast African art collection. On Monday, the museum appointed Kristen Windmuller Luna. She's 31, who has a PhD in African art history from Princeton University, lectures in Columbia University's Department of Art History and Archaeology, and once worked as an educator in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where she was responsible for adult and college gallery tours in the African galleries. So she sounds pretty qualified. She's got her degree from an Ivy League university and lectures at an Ivy League university and has, in fact, worked at the Met in African art history. Despite the stellar resume, her hiring left some wondering why a qualified person of color did not get the post. Seriously? At Brooklyn Museum? At Brooklyn. I guess this is a tweet of some
Twitter
sort.
Yeah, thing, yes. Yeah.
There goes the neighborhood for good, opined Philadelphia journalist Ernest Owens on Twitter. People from the African diaspora are frustrated with white people being gatekeepers of our narrative, tweeted Kimberly Selden. The museum defended its decision. Kristen is the perfect choice to build upon the Brooklyn Museum's track record as an innovator in the collection and exhibition of the arts of Africa, said Jenner Chi, the museum's chief curator, in a statement. The museum said it was committed to equity, but would not discuss the hiring process with the Post. Not sure why they would necessarily have to discuss their hiring process with the Post. Following days of criticism on social media, the museum tweeted Thursday, "We have been listening closely to the debate about our recent appointments to our curatorial team. We are listening and we hear you. We just don't care. As we think about ways to engage in this conversation with the care it deserves, we want to assure you that you can count on us, as ever, to continue working deeply on equity within our institution and beyond." African Americans make up just 4% of all curators, conservators, educators, and leadership, according to a Mellon Foundation demographic study in 2015. The same report said that people of color occupied 42% of intellectual leadership positions in the Brooklyn Museum. So now, people of color doesn't necessarily mean black people. I guess I just want to hear what you guys have to say on this. On one hand, if I go to a Chinese restaurant, I'd really like to have a Chinese waiter, right? Like it that makes the experience more real to me, I suppose.
More authentic.
Yeah, it's more authentic. So I get why people would want a black person doing African art, but beyond that, I want a black person with an African accent doing the African art.
I'm thinking here, and every time I've ever seen either a documentary or just some TV show on the History Channel about ancient Egypt, almost all of the Egyptologists are old, stuffy British guys.
Yeah, yeah. They've got all the. That's because they have all the stuff. they confiscated all the loot from the pyramids and took it back to London.
So, I'm just trying to sort of think out here that you don't necessarily have to be from the place where the stuff is from to be the museum curator of the stuff.
I concur with you completely.
A lot of times, people think that there needs to be some kind of connection between the museum curator and the stuff.
Yep, I get it. I both sides of these. That's how I feel on this. Is that what if I'm not passionate about the stuff where I'm from or where my ancestors are from? So,
but also,
most of my ancestors are British and Irish. I could certainly look into British and Irish history, but I'm not that interested in it.
But at the same time, shouldn't the most qualified person be hired for the job without regard to ethnicity?
That would be a very fair and unbiased way to hire. And it's kind of interesting, right? So if for whatever reason, the Brooklyn Museum here had, for instance, a black person who was doing, European art, I don't think any of us would think really much about it at all. I wouldn't. Oh, well, there you go. It wouldn't make me think anything.
Right.
I wouldn't even consider it as an issue. It wouldn't even pop into my mind, this person talking about European art is not European, of European descent. But at the same time, there's certainly a conversation that goes on out there that is something of the effect that the white people came here, they took our stuff, and now they've got the positions talking about that stuff. And it's kind of interesting. On one hand, I think of Native Americans, for instance. I can't remember. They found some body from some, hundreds or thousands of years ago or whatever, in some particular place. They wanted to study it, and whatever, some Native American group said, no, you may not study that body. We want to give it a proper spiritual burial. None of these people knew who this person was. They were dead for centuries or millennia or whatever. But they had some kind of say over the science that would be done surrounding. Now, for me, I don't know what scientific discovery could have been had surrounding this person.
But then there's also the question, and I don't know the specifics of this particular thing.
Right.
But maybe there's a property rights issue. So let's say you've got a bunch of acres of land and somebody says, hey, Mark, I want to go dig some holes over in one of those back acres that you never even look at.
Yep.
And they start digging a hole and they find something interesting.
Yep.
You technically own that. If they say, we want to put this in some museum somewhere, you could say, no.
I actually had a situation like this. I have a
that they find Encino Man, and you're like, no, that's my Encino Man.
I had a weird hill on my property, and a friend of mine is an archaeologist, wasted his time going to university for archaeology degree, right? And I said, you can come excavate this lump. And he said, well, I might just do that over the summer. I'm looking for specifically corn seed. And apparently that's a big deal. If you can find corn seed, and in my particular area, this very well could have been corn seed. And so he's like, you're going to need a contract because if we find something, we want something very clear about who gets to keep what and what happens. And so I spent a little bit of time thinking about it. Turns out he never came and excavated the lump. It's still there. If any of you have an archaeology degree, and you don't want to, and you want to work for free, you're welcome to come and dig up my lump, the bump, the hill, the whatever it is.
Oh, this is at the place you live at now.
Yeah, currently, okay. Right now.
This is Florida.
Yeah, I wouldn't let you anywhere near it. and maybe there's corn seed in there. I don't know what's in there, but he wanted to make sure that there was a contract beforehand to be clear on who owned what if it was dug up.
Right.
I think that the Brooklyn Museum, I certainly believe that there's already some kind of bias for a person of color to curate this section of the museum. I just believe I know how people are, and I know people would appreciate that. But also there's value in having someone who is explicitly not of that race or that group whose art is being curated and displayed, because they're a third party. They're not biased necessarily one way or the other, so they can give an independent opinion of it. And that's got a particular value all its own.
Well, I don't know. You want an unbiased opinion on art? This sucks. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. I mostly feel that about modern art. Free Talk Live. Talk Live. It's the live Sunday edition. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
Call in, talk about whatever's on your mind. We're talking about this situation with the Brooklyn Museum, where they've hired some well-qualified young lady to head their African art department. And apparently, some people don't like the choice because of the color of her skin. So...
The person that was hired has a PhD and a master's in art and archaeology from Princeton University and a bachelor's in history of art from Yale University.
Yep, so got Ivy League pedigree coming
and
out the wazoo.
And she's a lecturer at Columbia University, specializing in the early modern period and Christian Ethiopia.
This may very well be one of those instances where the Ivy League degree does make a difference.
Yes.
But it's unlikely that you'll ever be a curator at a high-level museum in the United States. So anyway, for years, libertarians of all stripes have wanted a directory of liberty-minded businesses, and we're helping to build one. You can help, too. Go to liberty.menu. It's a tool for our community. At its core, it's a directory for events and businesses and digital content. Listings can be rated and reviewed, and there's a bit of a social network aspect to it you can connect and share with others. Use of liberty.menu is exclusively for individuals who reject the initiation of force and for those who agree to abide by the ethics of the non-aggression principle. Hasn't stopped people from signing up for the Libertarian Party, so please go check them out. Put your voluntarist ideas into action at liberty.menu and use coupon code FTL. You get a special badge. It's liberty.menu. Go check out all the businesses there that are offering their services. If you've got some kind of business or organization, you should put it up. Liberty.menu. Going back to the story from the New York Post, apparently the Brooklyn Museum has sparked outrage within the black community after tapping a white woman to curate its vast, vast African art collection. And I don't have a solid opinion on this other than I want to live in a world where people's color doesn't matter. But I also acknowledge that things can feel more authentic with, based on somebody's ethnicity.
Right.
If, you know, a fella named John Smith is taking you through the Holocaust Museum, it doesn't seem quite as legit as a woman named, you know, Winnie Rosenberg. And I can get where people are, like, in this particular area, I guess I can get the point, but this lady seems really qualified.
Right, and you mentioned earlier about when you go to a Chinese restaurant,
yeah,
you want someone that is at least Asian taking your order and bringing you the food, and preferably cooking, but you're not necessarily seeing who cooks. But when you go to an Italian restaurant, do you want somebody named Mario taking your order?
Better believe I do. I do.
Okay.
Now, I get that many of the Italian restaurants these days are often run by Greeks, and I got nothing bad to say about
Thank
you, Greek people of the world, for serving some of the most delicious food at restaurants across America.
I've never really thought about, you know, the ethnicity of who's cooking my Italian food.
It has to do with waves of immigration into this country. You know, the country sort of has a foundation of Englishness, part of the Anglo Empire. And basically, I would say we're a little obtuse on the difference between Mediterraneans out there. So, you know, the Greek folks come in and buy the Italian restaurant and run it. Nobody really knows exactly why they've started adding, baklava to the menu. And maybe you can get some shots of ouzo if you want, you know, those kind of things. Like, we just don't know why these things. We're just happy with the menu items as they continue on. But my wife's grandfather, immigrant from Italy, opened up an Italian restaurant in Chicago and married a Polish lady. If you're from Chicago, you understand Italians and Poles. Basically, that was the city for a long time. Hardest working city in America, Chicago. And, you know, that was the right thing for the right time. By the way, you could own a gun in Chicago back then, and he certainly did. And, but I guess those times have changed. The children of those people who came over here and, built those businesses wanted to move on and do other things. And like I was saying in the first hour, I think in many cases our children have been given so many options that they don't know what to do with their lives, right, and end up, you know, kind of sloshing about for a bit. If they'd just go ahead and do the careers that their fathers did, they'd probably get pretty great introductions into businesses and do quite well for themselves. But they don't want to.
But how many people, and this is a legitimate question, how many people now have careers where they could actually wind up teaching those things to their children? And how many people just have jobs where they're, you know, like some middle management paper pusher, and that's not really a career that they want to pass on to their children?
I don't know, but if I would have started off at the mold making, the glass plant at Tropicana, my dad could have definitely gotten me a union job back when I turned 18. There's no doubt about it. I just didn't have any interest in it at all. And I floundered until I was 30 years old or so. Let's go to the phones. Got David calling in from New Mexico. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, yeah. I woke up this morning. I was laying in bed. After a few minutes, I flipped the radio on to the local station. First thing I hear is the radio guy talking to me directly by name. And the reason he was doing that is because he knows that I keep an eye on how judges behave. And if you Google panty judge, apparently out on Long Island, there's a judge, Italian spelling. I like the reporter's language. He was snatching panties from a neighbor's dirty clothes hamper, in particular, their 23-year-old daughter who happened to have previously interned for him.
Oh, that's disturbing.
But, yeah. No need to worry, though. This judge, it says here in the article that he has what's her language? A good record. He has a good reputation. That's what it is. So
I'm
sorry,
no David.
Problems.
David, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You didn't say that he stole his daughter's panties, did you?
No, it was the neighbor's daughter's panties.
Okay, all right.
The neighbor's daughter's panties, since she was previously an intern of his.
You say that came from the dirty clothes hamper. The story that I read said they were soiled, and it made a point to say that they were soiled, which was I wondered why they stuck that in there, and then I thought maybe he was the guy who soiled them.
I think soiled just means they were not clean.
Why? There's got to be more to it than that. Because
it means, the more to it, it means that he is a panty sniffer as opposed to a fetish panty wearer
or panty collector.
Well, if he wanted to just wear some attractive pair of panties, he could go get those at the store and doesn't need to swipe them off of people's lines.
Exactly.
Yeah. Target, Walmart, Dollar General.
You can't steal the dirty ones at the store.
Yeah, that's disturbing. Thanks for the call, David.
You're not going to the right Walmart.
Free Talk Live.
LRN.FM now has a Discord. Discord is a free text and voice chat platform, and we now have our own server with a bunch of channels at discord.lrn.fm. You can join other listeners as they chat about various things during our live shows, or anytime, day or night. Discord software is available cross-platform, so you can have it on whatever device you want and take your chats anywhere. Join our Discord at discord.lrn.fm. That's discord.lrn.fm.
Free Talk Live, Live Sunday edition. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
Well, it is April Fool's Day and Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. I think it's
also Rusev Day.
Yeah. That's a wrestling joke, right?
Yes.
No one else gets it.
Except for the other wrestling fans that are listening.
Good for them.
Both of them laughed.
Both of them laughed. Bitcoin.com. It's a great website, great resource for finding out about cryptocurrencies. Give you a good look at the cryptocurrency atmosphere. They've got great news resources for people who are just getting into cryptocurrency. So they've got wallets, ways to buy cryptocurrency with credit cards or a variety of different ways. I think that a lot of people wanted to know about that credit card stuff. If it looks like Bitcoin's on sale right now, looks like a good time to buy, I don't know. I couldn't say for sure, but that's what it looks like to me. You can actually do cryptocurrency mining at Bitcoin.com, that pool.bitcoin.com. They have all kinds of resources. Pretty much everything that has to do with cryptocurrency, they've got it there. Bitcoin.com. I like them as a news source. But I wanted to tell you about the April Fool's story that caught me. First, I gotta say, I generally don't like April Fool's jokes because I don't like to give information that is incorrect to people.
The funniest one that I've ever seen is the old, I think it was the BBC that did it back in the 50s, the spaghetti farmers.
Whatever, they're funny. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, they've actually got video of spaghetti farmers pulling spaghetti off of the trees.
Yeah, that's good. And I mean, you kind of feel like anybody who believes that they're spaghetti trees, they deserve what they get. In my case, it's Easter. My son got an Easter basket. Now he's down in Florida with his mother and his grandmother, who I got to rename her title to his Muffy. So it's not his Meemaw or whatever; it's his Muffy. And Muffy, this is the first year that Muffy got to put together an Easter basket for Jack.
All right,
and it was prodigious. She doesn't have the same thoughts surrounding sugar and chocolate and candy that Jack's mother has, and she doesn't have the same relationship with Jack's mother that I do. So she felt no problem. Big old basket. Let's just throw candy in here, right? So Jack gets my mother always made a treasure hunt for me. So, you know, go to the thing you sit on and go poop and look for your next clue. And then so he goes, looks at the toilets and both of them. Oh, there you go. There's a next clue. And so he picks up the piece of paper, you know, go to the place where we dry the clothes, you know. And obviously they've gotten harder. I'm just coming up with things off the top of my head. They've gotten harder as he's gotten older. But when he was four, we would read them to him. And they were very simple. And he would get frustrated if they weren't, you know, simple. If he didn't feel like he could find the candy in a relatively short period of time. Now he's, you know, his patients are better and that kind of thing. So she took him on a, you know, hunt
scavenger
around the house,
hunt.
Scavenger hunt around the house, and finally ended up with a big Easter basket. And he calls me up, Easter basket. Oh, you wouldn't believe it, Daddy. All the candy I've got, I have some and I'm going crazy already.
I have so much candy.
Right? That's what it's like. And I'm like, Jack, You're not supposed to have any of that candy until I get down there. You have to hold on to that until I get down there next month. I've got to have that candy before we go see Avengers. And he's, well, he's outraged. He doesn't even know how, you know, and in his world, rules are arbitrary and stupid anyway, right? Like the world
they
is
generally
full of-
are, and I'm 40 years old.
Well, imagine what they're like for a 10-year-old who doesn't even understand why rules are in place. So it's completely believable to him that I would make it so that he couldn't eat the candy until I got down there.
So you just figured out why I became an anarchist, because I kept asking why and I never got good answers.
Yeah, yeah. So ultimately, well, in his case, it was just for probably 15 seconds or so. And I'm like, April Fool's, Jack. And he thought that was kind of funny and he was excited and probably the most happy that he could just get his candy again. Nonetheless, I got caught by this article from county10.com. I literally said, you've got to be S'ing me. The title is First 90 Kangaroos Released in Wyoming. You've got to be S'ing me. I click on the link and it goes on. The Wyoming Wild Game Department, the WWGD, what would God do? I don't know. Partnering with the Wyoming Migration Initiative, the WMI, have released the first of five planned batches of 90 antelopine kangaroos into the Wyoming outdoors. Now, I'm not from Australia. I don't know what kind of kangaroos there are in this world. Dubbed Project Sage Hopper by the WWGD team responsible for evaluating the viability of Wyoming's habitat.
The Wyoming Wild Game Department.
Yes. I looked that up.
They have it in the first sentence of the article.
But I checked. Because, okay, so I do double-check articles as best I can. I try to find a fact that I can look for, and I checked kangaroos, Wyoming. There's last year, there's some story about kangaroos. I didn't read the whole thing. I was reading this story, but it's like, oh, the internet is not bereft of stories that have to do with Wyoming and kangaroos. So this is good stuff. Antelopine means antelope-like. We are more interested to see how these kangaroos adapt to Wyoming's landscape, says WMI Director Matt Kaufman. If they start migrating, we'll be tracking their movements, looking to see how they learn to exploit the sage steppe and the mountains where they hop over these sorts of things. So, you know, they got some pictures.
Well, they do hop over things.
Yeah, and they got a little gif here of some fighting kangaroos, and I'm like, because that's the next thing I'm thinking. These things
Switch
are going
to leg.
Kick the S out of somebody.
I'm watching the kangaroo fight right now, and I love the way they do the drop kicks right to the kneecap.
Yeah, they are.
It reminds me of Japanese strong style wrestling.
Yeah, right there. Boom, right in the crotch. Oh, yeah? Here, wham, right back at you. And they claw each other's face and this kind of thing. Even as they hope for successful establishment of Wyoming's newest large mammal, researchers aren't giving up on the native big game that so many Wyomingites cherish. Research is needed now more than ever to identify and map the critical habitats that migratory big game require. I'm like, oh, these are for hunting? What? Are Americans going to eat kangaroo? They had me all the way through this article. With a successful introduction of kangaroos into Wyoming's ecosystem, WMI will review other opportunities for the state to be home to other marsupial species. I'm like, what?
Possums.
Well, we've got possums in North America.
They are marsupials.
They are marsupials, but how about koala bears? How about wallabies? I don't even know what else.
Wombats.
Is a Tasmanian devil a marsupial? I'm not even sure. And
they hate water.
Yeah, so I'm reading this thing. WMI will, a short list for the future proposed introductions include koala, wallaby, and the endangered Tasmanian devil, right? So, yes, Tasmanian devil is. Then at that point, just after before I saw that line, my eyes skipped down to April Fools, right at the bottom of the article. And I'm like, man, well, I think this is a good joke. I don't like very many April Fool's jokes. This one certainly got me, but it's not that hard to get people. I don't like articles where they don't have a dead giveaway. I had to read all the way to the bottom to get there. What do you guys think?
I like a good April Fool's joke, and yeah. I love some good satire. I just think that there are way too many stupid people that don't realize that things are satire.
I didn't. All the way through this article. I'm like, these people are insane releasing. I
but thought we figured it out.
No, 100 years ago.
He figured it out when it said April Fool's.
They were releasing camels in the deserts of Arizona.
Right.
Free Talk Live.
Hi, Jolly.
Yeah. 855-450-3733. Free Talk Live. Talk Live. It's the final segment here in this live Sunday edition. It's Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl.
Last segment, we talked about a silly April Fool story that that caught me. It was Wyoming, I guess, 90. The first of five batches of 90 kangaroos released into the wild in Wyoming. I'm like, you've got to be messing me. I just
couldn't believe it. But it does sound like something that some government agency would
do, right? It's been done before, yeah.
Because what was the thing in Australia that was brought in that was not native to Australia that became a menace?
Dingo?
And then they said, no, that's not the one that I'm thinking of. But, you know, it wound up because it wasn't native.
The
it
emu?
Became invasive.
Okay.
No, not no. Emus.
Emus are indigenous, I think. Yeah.
But then to solve the problem of like some frog or something, they brought in.
Oh, you know what? I think it was actually rabbits. Rabbits in Australia.
Yeah, and then they brought in something to hunt the rabbits, and then that thing wound up becoming invasive, and then
just keeps happening.
Yeah.
It's why Johnny Depp was, why they were so serious about him bringing his dog in. Because they've seen bad things happen before.
Yeah, yeah. Many islands are the same way. I was down in St. Kitts in February, and they're known for their monkeys there. But the monkeys are non-indigenous. They're invasive. And they were brought from West Africa, and they just went wild and ate all the parrot eggs. So no parrots on the island, but monkeys.
Okay.
So, you know. Take what you can get, when I guess, in these circumstances.
I see it as sort of, I'm not a wildlife expert or have no college training in ecology, but I see it as like a global Darwinism. You know, let the species come in and may the best one win.
I am of the opinion that we would want to preserve as many species as possible because you never know what has the cure to cancer or whatever. And, you know, these and species ecosystems are symbiotic, and you never know if you get rid of this, you know, mosquito, which, by the way, I'm willing to sacrifice all mosquitoes. As far as I'm concerned, let's just get rid of them all. But
well, you can thank the United States federal government for mosquitoes still existing, because DDT was a very good thing, well, pesticide, but because somebody convinced somebody that it softened eagle eggs, the United States government banned it, not only in the United States, but in all countries that we do trade with, which means that all of the African countries that have bad mosquito problems with malaria, they also can't use DDT.
Yeah, I've heard. Let's go to Sarah calling in from New Mexico. April Fool's, Sarah.
Oh, yes. You know, our new mayor is
hold on. Is it my mayor?
I don't know your mayor, but did you know, Sarah, that for the first time in 93 years, jackalopes have returned to their natural habitat in Yellowstone Park?
You know what? I'm concerned about our homeless population here in Albuquerque.
But what about the jackalopes finally returning to their native habitat in Yellowstone Park?
Well, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the homeless women here. Our mayor is going to dump
only
millions of
women?
Dollars into the homeless program. I'm more concerned about people, homeless women, because I want them to have their own shelters, because the pimps, they wound up the homeless women. You know, I was a victim of pimps. They were going to pimp me off. That's why I bring it up. I'm 50 years old now, but when I was homeless when I was 18, they were scouting me. They were aggressively trying to pimp me out.
And yes,
that's
would,
why
yeah.
It's a... Oh, yeah. So, and they feel like they're entitled.
Who's they?
So, you know, my emphasis is to have women-only shelters where the Johns come and exploit them. The pimps want to sell them. The women, the men come out of the jail. They have no sex. They want to exploit the women.
Aren't most of the most successful shelters run by private organizations like the Salvation Army?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But the thing is that our city, he's willing to dump millions of dollars.
Into.
But the thing is here is that they throw the men with the women. They just throw them all together, and the women have to fend for themselves. And that's the number one place that the pimps go look out for.
Surely there'll be some kind of separation between the sleeping quarters of the men and the sleeping quarters of the women.
As they're generally.
I mean, they may have to. They may be eating food together, but
yeah, there are common areas.
Right, but that's enough for common area. For them to intimidate the women and to follow the women.
So do you think that apartment buildings should be segregated, men-only apartment buildings, women-only apartment buildings?
You don't want
them
hanging out in the hallways and picking up the ladies.
No, it's a complete... You know what? Being homeless is almost like being in jail. It's like a very, very exploitative kind of environment. You know, you've been in jail, right? You told me you murdered a guy.
I didn't murder anybody.
Do you think this... Is it like renting an apartment in there?
No, you can,
they will kill you if you don't fight back, right?
Well, you can lock the door. You know, the circumstances I had, you could lock the door. Sometimes you had to come out, but, you know, just sort of dependent on the situation. I can assure you that there were certainly some hair-raising situations, but that wasn't – I suspect that women aren't kept in the same sort of conditions that, you know, I was in the 1980s in jail.
No, but I mean, that's a street mentality here in New Mexico. You guys live in a very civilized state. I was told that you guys have, New Hampshire has very civilized law where they protect homeless women. Over here, this is like a sex trafficking state.
I'm just thinking about the homeless shelters here in New Hampshire isn't as nice as the one I saw in Sarasota, Florida, that I actually went and took the tour of while I was working for the radio station. They had separate quarters for women, and they actually had family quarters, too. So if a family, if families were homeless, then they had areas for them. I presume the family quarters had their own little kitchenettes or whatever in them. I mean, you don't want to make these things too nice because they're transient housing, but...
I mentioned that they had 4,800 reports of human trafficking reports. This is still the wild, wild west, and there's no laws to really get after the pimps here.
Actually, Sarah, there are laws to go after people that are human trafficking. And one thing that's been happening over the last probably 5 to 10 years is that law enforcement now considers every woman who is a prostitute to be a victim of sex trafficking, even if she says that she's not working with anyone and she's doing it of her own volition.
Yeah.
So the numbers of there have been X number of reports, I am very skeptical about that number because they're overinflating the numbers so that they can try to say that the problem is worse than what the problem actually is. The solution isn't more laws. The solution is to actually wind up
enforcing the ones that exist.
Well, and removing the criminal penalties so that you move this from the black market that is inherently more violent. And then you allow the trade to happen in a more safe environment.
I'd be curious as to you know, what human trafficking numbers are like in Germany, where prostitution is legal.
Well, you know what? Like I said, is my solution here just to not legalize prostitution.
Of course,
that's
it's not
spreading AIDS and herpes, and I don't condone that.
Actually, Sarah, if you look in Nevada, where they do have regulated prostitution, the amount of disease is actually lower than in states that don't. And then I've got a question for you, just a very simple question. Is there a moral and ethical difference between prostitution and two people having a one-night stand after meeting at a bar?
But there's money involved. You know what I mean? Prostitutes,
we know how it works.
No, I know how prostitution works. But my question is, because you're saying that prostitutes spread disease, can't people that hook up at a bar also be spreading disease?
Yeah, it's about the same.
Okay,
I don't know.
Great. You said that there's no moral and ethical difference. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
But you know what? I still want women-only shelters to keep the pimps away from the women here in Albuquerque.
There are lots of women-only shelters. Usually they have to do with people with domestic violence issues. As a matter of fact, there are very – I think the answer is one in the country, domestic violence place that'll take men. So you've got your women-only shelters, Sarah. Thanks for the call. 855-450-3733. I'm relatively certain if somebody's...
We don't have time for any more calls tonight.
Suffering. Yeah, I don't know. I just use that as a space filler. It's terribly sorry. Write it down. Put it in your phone. You'll be ready for next show tomorrow at 0100 Hours Zulu here on Free Talk Live. It's been Mark with you.
Johnny Ray.
And Daryl. And that's 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern for the people that don't feel like doing calculations based on UTC.
Those people really need to step up their game is what they need to do. Check us out in the meantime at freetalklive.com. We've got the Discord. They're talking right now. The show goes on in the Discord at discord.free.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.